Hey, welcome to the radio showgram. This is The Fishing School. I'm Johnny Wilkins, and we're going to talk about how you can really improve your fishing during tough fishing conditions, such as super cold fronts. So today the wind is screaming outside the showgram. So the studio, Chum City Studio Lounge, is rocking and reeling. That could present the usual technical difficulties, but still going to try and put on a good showgram for you and give you some key components to improve your fall fishing and tough bite fishing situations. I think the last time we were talking about catching trout on the last episode, and I do have good news to bring regarding that and a few limits, and we'll get the showgram started without much more. We'll talk about some record catches down in the Gulf. So it looks like the Gulf is bouncing back and it's resilient. So that's good news for everybody. We'll talk about some local clubs doing some stocking, which means anybody can take care of the lakes and waters right around them. As long as you work in cooperation with a few groups, you can do some good things for your local waters. And we love that because the showgram is all about catching fish right next to your house. So close to home, don't drive so much. Instead, you know, fish a lot more, drive a lot less. That's what the showgram's about. So we'll teach you how to amp up your setup. We'll talk about why slip bobbers are horrible. And I'll give you some specifics as to why that is. Slip bobbers got their butts kicked out in the trout opener. So we'll talk about that and more. Showgram. Let's do it.
Here's Johnny.
I find your methods of teaching very unusual.
Well, I did study with Dr. Errol von Straßenberger back in...
Who?
Oh, you don't know him? Oh, he's like one of the leading leaders in unusual methods. Actually, he's how I was appointed to the Presidential Council for Experimental Education. To tell you about what we've been doing in here, but there's such a thing as teacher-student confidentiality, and I don't want to be in breach of education law because I could be dismembered by the teachers' union.
Are you ready?
out there and melt some faces!
I don't know about melt some faces, but we're going to catch some fishes. Because that's what I've been up to, and I've been keeping track this season. And remember, my quest for 3,000 was closing in on my 3,000th fish. But it's going to take a cold November day for me to accomplish that. I'm going to put my skills against the cold front. Of course, today, no, I got to get you a local forecast here. We're going to get a recent wind rating so that I can give you appreciation for what's happening right here. But the wind is howling outside, so Bears and Texans tonight, and it's going to be ripping wind. So I'll get you the current wind conditions out there to give you an idea. Today I just said keep it. Got a 38-mile-an-hour gust and wind out of the south at about 28 miles an hour. So it's ripping. And it's solid wind. There's some bigger gusts that are really nasty. So, oh, thank you, Weather Channel, for that lovely background music.
Here's your forecast.
Okay. So, today, not the best day for float fishing, but I will tell you that if you were out in the wind, what you would want to have is called a waggler. And I've got some interesting waggler story and a great overall story about anglers in boats and anglers on shore, and maybe a little etiquette, breach of etiquette. Oh, for sure. So let's we'll probably start it off with some of that. But before I get going, here's some ways you can call the showgram. There's only a few of us who listen to the showgram. So odds are people are busy, and also I moved the showgram around a little bit in the fall here until we lock and load into a time slot for you and for me. More importantly, me. I got to get on the microphone and broadcast. You can call in anytime during the live show, 347-994-3267, and ask your fishing question. So that's 347-994-3267. I always invite you to send me an email at radio@chicagofishingschool.com. You can drop me an email there, or you can follow the showgram on Twitter at Chicago Fishing. So follow us on Twitter at Chicago Fishing if you're just not into, you don't want to jump on live. I understand. Some people just don't want to, they don't want to talk on the radio. They're nervous or they're not into the public scene. That's fine. Although this is pretty intimate setting. Like I said, there's only, there's about 7,000 listeners to the podcast each month. So probably divide that by four and you're probably, you know, talking about, 1,500, 2,000 people. So there's only a few of us, and we're all the same. We're all in the same boat. We're all wanting to learn more about fishing. So there's no such thing as a bad question at all. So I welcome them all, and I love the feedback I'm getting. I did get some letter critiquing my broadcast, looking for the listener wanted more information, more details, and more elements of the rigs and such. Sometimes I give you a rig. Detail it on the air, but they were looking for more specifics, and definitely I want to do that. Give you guys some more specifics. Let's see. Sweet. I'm looking into some. I'm always into antiques and antique stuff. And so I've acquired some really awesome bobbers because ever since the 40s, 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, we talk about the inventions and all the doohickeys and thingamabobs and different types of ways that the American angler has tried to tackle situations with mechanics. And trying to defeat some of the problems that an angler faces. But what you need to do is know that the physics of fishing dictate what you can do and what you can put in the water in order to catch and succeed. It's the physics of a fish taking a bait, and it's hydrodynamics. We've talked about this on the showgram before, but it's the specific act of a fish drawing its gills open, taking water in its mouth, and pulling bait in, then closing his mouth, hanging on the bait, or swimming, or standing still, or rising in the water, or in the case of it has its head down feeding in the water, it's going to then float upward. All those physics are the way that a fish naturally and most comfortably feeds play into the way that you, the angler, can hook up on a fish. Or if you're using a float, you can see the activities below the water. So interestingly enough, I purchased a couple of these bobbers. One is called the Bait Saver Bobber. One is called the Depot Bob. It automatically sets the depth of your rig. I think I've spoken about the Depot Bob. I recently got a bobber called the Tumbler. And the Tumbler is a mechanical bobber that stands about 7.5 inches tall. That isn't the bad part of this thing. The bad part is it's got a lot of surgical steel on it, and it's got a lot of moving parts. It's got some lock channels, some springs. It's got a little gravity trip mechanism, and then the instructions were a hoot. I'm going to have to grab the instructions. I'm going to have to post those online. But I was reading the instructions of the Tumbler. I'm fascinated with these things. And the Tumbler is a mechanical bobber, like I said, 7.5 inches tall. I have to figure out when. I think it was in the 50s. And anyways, this thing, it looks like a UFO with a giant, like a steel rod coming out of the middle of a UFO is the best way to describe it. And then it's got little steel mechanisms on it and tracks and things. It's something. It's a something. So it was made to help the angler, in some of the words off the packaging, detect bites that they normally wouldn't, catch the fish that got away. So it was made to try and be more sensitive, and I'm going to make my way. It's all put away, nestled in this little box, so I'm going to take it out. But anyways, there's many of these inventions, and I definitely have to. I'm going to open up a little bobber museum online and showcase some of these beauties, because I see the de-evolution of our fishing tackle coming from the time when they manufactured products and made plastics and molded things, or injection molded, or made things that were not natural. They're no longer natural. And once they did that, the engineers can do all they want, and the person making this device can do all they want. But once you try and make something, it's no longer natural. And you're using the more unnatural a component you use, the more items that you put into a specific bobber, the more you try to attempt to make it more sensitive, the less sensitive it becomes. The more you add to it, not my opinion, but in fact, the more you add to some type of device, the more you take away from the ability of that device to have success. So I see a lot of items out there that don't work. And case in point, I trip out. I told you guys how to catch trout, and I had an article online, et cetera, at ChicagoFishingSchool.com. You can check that out. And I told you what the setups were going to be. I, again, learned something when I was out. So I try to learn every time I'm out. And this is a good case. This is a great case for learning and advancing my fishing, and advancing our fishing, advancing your fishing. So if you tune into the broadcast and you listen a little bit, you should learn a lot. Some little tiny concepts should advance your fishing a lot. So I get a lot of letters that say that people have caught more fish than they ever have just by listening to the program, and I hope to continue that. But to answer the letter, which was talking about not having enough details in my rigs, et cetera, I do want to give details. Probably the part where I get most stuck most often, and I say it on the showgram all the time, is that I'm stuck because I can send you to no store on the continental U.S. where you can pick up all this stuff. So there's very few stores where they do sell this stuff. I would like to get, I know there are little pockets and places out there. There's some great anglers, and there's probably some independent tackle stores that have some of this good stuff. The fill line of floats is an example of when an angler makes a product and then brings that to market, because it's a concept that works, right? So the Lindy fill line of floats, they are good. That is a good start. So if I had to set you loose on something, I would say take some of those smaller floats, and that would be a decent start for you, okay? So those kind of embody a lot of the concepts that I talk about on the showgram. But the problem is I can't give you specifics about everything. I usually tell you things like anchor split shot and super do split shot and fill split shot. Those are specifics that I have given out. And those assortments come in increments of 0.1 gram, okay? And that is significant. You want to get down in the 0.1 gram, and we want to think in tenth of a gram increments. Why? Because you want to tune your fishing. You want to fine-tune it, okay? And when I opened up the broadcast and I talked about slip bobbers and a slip bobber getting crushed out in the trout opener, I mean, the slip bobbers, this was a particularly tough bite condition. And there are physical problems with the setup of a slip bobber. And so we're going to go over those definitely when I get started here. We're obviously started. But I will tell you that most of the problems with the slip bobber is due to the fact that there are, 4 to 6 times as much buoyancy needed, and also split shot needed in order to fish a proper sensitive rig. So I'm going to detail that, and I actually have an illustration which I'm going to have to put up on ChicagoFishingSchool.com. I'll have to post this. So I did a little illustration showing you a setup that worked versus a setup that didn't work. And this is actually a setup that you can make. You could actually make a stick float like this, simple little float. I actually was using a Peacock Quill Waggler, which I've spoken about a few times, and I'm actually going to start making some of these components so that you can just purchase them. I'm going to hand make some of these, so I will be importing the quill shafts, and I'm going to be making these. Why? Because they're deadly. Because they're deadly awesome. And I'm gonna tell you, not only did my Peacock Quill Waggler that I made go up against the Lindy fill slip bobbers. So if you fish a slip bobber and you feel real confident about that, and that's you've had good success for that, I've got good news for you. I've got something that's 10 times more sensitive, and it'll catch more than 10 times the number of fish that a Lindy fill slip bobber would, okay? And it's physics. The slip bobber is limited, and the way that you can set it up, it's limited because it has that slip knot and it has the shot. And the shot drives the line down until that stop hits, and then the distance between that split shot and your float, that's it. It's over. Done. Deal over. And I'm going to explain this rig in detail. And also, I do want to thank people that send me notes, any time of feedback in that. I want to thank you, especially, I believe it was Josh, and I have to look back in, and excuse me if I'm messing up your name. I really appreciate the letter. In fact, I'm going to look it up right now because it's important to me to get people's names correct. But I believe it's a listener out of Minneapolis, and he sent me a note kind of detailing some specifics on how I could improve the broadcast. I specifically reached out for some feedback, and I said, well, what can I do to improve that? So I know I marked it. I get it bombarded by spam emails, so sometimes it takes me a bit to find what I'm looking for. So I get hundreds of emails each day, and sometimes I get an email, two times a minute, or I'm getting an email once a minute. So, yeah. I'm going to go with Josh, and I might have to correct myself. I have no problem doing that. But let's see. Let's go with Josh. I can't find it right now. Sorry for that. Well, that's my homework. I've got homework between this broadcast and next. So we'll say Josh right now. It's not you. I'm sorry. I will fix it. But I got some great feedback, and it was to give more precise details so that people could set things up. So I think with I'm going to try to do an illustration of a rig each month, and I'll set that up on the website. And maybe I combine all these and put them together and create a guide where you can just get a whole guide. So maybe that's the goal. But for now, since you're a listener of the showgram, you're going to benefit. And you can sign up on ChicagoFishingSchool.com. You just go to the – actually, no, let me do this. The newsletter, I have a newsletter that is distributed by LiveBaitFishingTackle.com. If you go to livebaitfishingtackle.com and just sign up for the newsletter on the right there, I'm going to send you a rig, a diagram. At least once every other month, I'm going to send you this diagram or post one on. So since you're a listener of the showgram and that, you're going to benefit, and you can spot these on Chicago Fishing School or have them sent to your inbox, and I'll give you details on how you can set up your tackle to catch more fish. So it was the annual trout opener, and usually – this, you're going to get some details too, by the way, is the moral of the story. So you can thank your friend from, I believe, Minnesota. I could be wrong on that too. I don't even think I got the state, but I think it's up north where there's some little decent more fishing. And this particular listener is a multi-species angler. So he actually prides himself in catching a lot of different fish in the water columns, just like I do. I'm not picky or choosy, as to what I'm going to catch to have a good time. I can have a good time with catching little shiner minnows, white suckers, golden suckers, wide mouth suckers, carp. I'm not picky. I just want some fish, crappies, walleye, whatever. So what the showgram does tell you is how to catch fish. I don't get real picky on my species unless there's a presentation which works. So we'll talk about trout and the setup and why slip bobbers get crushed and why they're bad. So I will talk about that in a second. So I do have to get to some business. We want to always thank our sponsors, obviously LiveBaitFishingTackle.com. I've been working with them to provide some tackle and put together some things. And there's going to be some gear bags and such that they're going to be putting up. I promised those in the last showgram. They promised me those will go up this week so that they're ready for purchase for gift giving, right in time for upcoming shopping season. So you should have some float kits and gear bags, et cetera, that you can get right there. So let's take care of some more business, and we'll get right back to it in a second.
Follow the showgram on Twitter. Search for a fishing school, or you can find previous episodes at chicagofishingschool.com.
If you're looking for great live bait and you don't have a bait store near, no problem. Just call the guys at Vados Bait. They will provide you with bait shipped right to your door and packed just the way you want it. So if you're heading on a trip to northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Carolina, whatever, and they will pack it to your specifics and get you great fresh bait right to your front door. So I've been using Vados Bait all year, and I've been happy with every single shipment that I've received. They back their goods. They pack it in such a way that the bait's going to arrive in fantastic shape. The secret to my success is Vados Bait and some of their live bait that I can't get locally, or that's way too expensive locally. So I do use my local stores, but when I need a larger quantity bait, or let's say trout season is approaching or ice fishing season, you want to get bait in bulk and save some money in the long run, go in with a friend and hit VadosBait.com. You will be very pleasantly surprised at the price in which you can get a special that you can receive. Let's say you're an ice fisherman and you're about to get the ice on the lakes near you, or you're a panfish fisherman or a multi-species angler. You can pick up 5,000 spikes 5,000 spikes or magnets, or for $30, or you can get 10,000 spikes or magnets for just $47.50. So go in with a friend, split the shipping to your house. You'll also receive a nice big little styrofoam cooler that you can use and use and reuse. So the secret to my success is providing the best bait in the water column, and that is fresh bait, okay? The nice thing about it is that when you receive this bait, it comes with an instruction sheet on how to care for it after you receive it. So follow the instructions, use the Vados bait, and you will not believe how well you can catch some fish. So that's VadosBait.com, and if you want to give them a call, the nice people at Vados Bait, you can call toll-free 866-584-3474. That's 866-584-3474. Give them a call. You'll catch some fish, I promise it. Use it in my trout fishing, and it rocked. So there you go. We'll give that a shot. Let's see. Guess we almost, of course, we wouldn't be complete without having a little bit of technical difficulties. I do have a brand new line. I'm going to try and improve the quality of the sound for you guys. So I'm going to be working on some of that. And so we're going to have some upgrades in the studio. So hopefully this stuff... You guys aren't getting any upgrades. So one thing, I'm getting rid of... So the kids in here are so nasty in the studio. I'm actually going to get rid of some of the comfortable chairs, and I'm going to bring in some older antique stuff. You know, it's got like splinters and that. Hey, you guys are so rude. The studio lounge is just nasty. So you get what you reap what you sow. Let's just turn their mic off for the rest of the showgram. Okay, so I got to get back to my story. So it's opening day and trout fishing. And what that means is usually arm-to-arm-to-arm anglers. And we get in pretty tight. So as forementioned, ahead of time, the week prior to, I contacted Vados Bait, and I picked up 10,000 spikes, which gets me ready for trout season. So I have fresh bait. And usually when I go, I'm going to bring maybe 2,000 spikes with me. And I use those, I'll throw a pinch over the top of the float and attract some trout in the area. It gets them in the area, it gets them interested. And that was kind of a key this season, because the bite was so light. So if I didn't have that going, I wouldn't be reporting good numbers to you as I am now. But I used the setup, which I will post up at the website. I'll post the first one, then when you subscribe, you'll receive these. I'm not going to post these too much on the website because these are going to be kind of exclusive for the fans who have signed up for the newsletter only. Okay, so kind of premium content thing. So I get set up, and I set up a few rigs, and I've learned some lessons in the past. And one thing that I've learned is it's not necessarily better to be able to cast out into the middle of the lake or cast real far, et cetera. Usually... if you have something on that's going to cast a good distance, what that means is it's going to cut down on your sensitivity. Why? You have too much bulk. You've just interfered in the physics of feeding, as we discussed. So if you had a slip float, let's say you had a Lindy slip float, I'm going to give you some specifics, especially for somebody nice enough to write me some feedback. Here's some specifics for everybody. A slip float, there's two main big gigantic problems which prevented the trout from taking the bait and keeping and holding the bait. There's many problems with it. But I'm going to break this down, and you'll see in a diagram. Once you see it, I think you'll be able to understand it. One of the main problems is most of these slip bobbers, like the Lindy's, I measured them out. They're between 5 and 8 grams. And what that means is there's 5 to 8 grams of wood that's buoyant, and you have to add then below that 5 to 8 grams of split shot lead to balance it out. So most anglers, they're not going to add, if it's a 5 gram float, they're not going to add their 4.8 or 4.9 grams of shot. Usually they have very big split shot. Okay, Now, one thing I noticed that was a constant that really wrecked their setup was having big split shots. So usually they would have 4 to 5, not BBs, but they would have bigger split shots. So they'd have what's called a swan shot or an SFG, which is a gram, 1 gram shot. Okay, that's a big, big, chunky split shot. And let's see. So, one thing I did for homework, too, is I went and took a look at the water gremlin split shot. And I say, if you got that in your tackle box, melt it down, make some new jigs out of it, do something with it, donate it to science. I don't know what else you could do. Use it to weight down some things in the garden. But the water gremlin split shot, it's been around a long time, and it's not their fault. They've kind of evolved with the bobbers, because the bobbers, the slip bobber in this case that we're talking about, is between 5 and 8 grams to sink it. So why, if it's that large of a float, are they going to provide you with smaller split shot, right? They usually wouldn't. Now, if you were to go and get the smallest water gremlin split shot, it'd be 0.31 grams. But most of the people I saw, they were throwing either the other size is 1.04 gram. There's another one that's 0.56 grams. So those are pretty chunky little split shot. The 1 gram split shots are about half the size of a dime or a dime. They're pretty big. And I could tell they were chucking this because they were chucking those slip bobbers well out in the lake. But the biggest thing I could hear is the splash of the lead. When the lead hit the water, it was just goosh, you could hear it hit the water. And if you had a proper rig that was sensitive, when it hit the water, it should make next to no splash at all. Okay? It should sound like a couple drops of water hitting it. You should not hear your float striking the water if you're going to have it set up when the bite was this tough for the trout. So going up against the 5 gram float with the chunky split shot lead, what I had instead was I had another float that I went up against, and it was a 1.6 gram float, and it was a Lindy Thill float. It was one of their more premium floats, and there's a good story behind this one. Now, my float came in at just under a gram, so I was about 20 to 30% lighter than what would be my opponent's. Let me get a drink here. Oh, yeah. So my opponent is throwing a waggler and a fill waggler. And it was funny because I got to tell this story. I had my son with me, and I'm fishing this setup with the bobber, and it's a fixed bobber. A fixed bobber means there's a small split shot set to the next set on either side of it. So what I had was a float with 2.2 gram split shot on the front and 2.2 split shot on the backside of the float. Those two pinched together against the float, and all the shot was up on the float. My only weight then that I had beneath the water was a small light swivel. Okay, so basically I was using the split shot as my only dropper. The only weight on this rig. So all of the split shot was up holding the float. And why was this important? Well, this isn't the rig I started out with at the beginning of the day. I actually adjusted, and I talk about making adjustments all the time on this showgram. And one thing you can do if you're not catching fish is get the shot away from the hook. So send the shot away from the hook bait as far as you can. Now, I did this slowly. Over the course of time, I was moving my shot up the line. Well, as there was no activity around, and as people were not catching fish nearby, I just moved all my shot up around the float. And this is a small float, about two-thirds of the length of a pencil. And it was made of peacock quill, like I said. So very light, very short, very straight, very aerodynamic. And I was going up against the losers, the big-time losers, were the Lindy slip bobbers. like I said, they're coming in at 5 grams. I'm coming in at just under a gram. I'm 5, 6, 7, 8 times more sensitive than their setup. Okay? Could I cast as far as them? No. Did I need to cast as far as them? No. Okay? The fish were closer in. I could get a decent cast with my light line. I had 3-pound main line, 2-pound leader. And so I could cast out far enough. Now, what happened was I had set up my son next to me with the same float. Okay? So I had two of these rigs going. And I oftentimes talk about fishing one line instead of two, right? Why? Because you can fish two lines. Do you catch twice as many fish? If you're a fan of the Showgram, the answer is no. You don't catch twice as many fish. In fact, I think you catch fewer fish in many instances. Why? The time spent with tangles, the time spent getting two of them out there, the time spent missing fish, losing fish, wrapping lines around, wrapping a fish around the net, the other line, getting one line tangled while the other one's getting a bite. Because you can't manage it, two, as efficiently as you can one, oftentimes you won't catch as many fish or more fish with two lines. And that was the case on opening day. I was trying to manage my son's line and my line at the same time, which resulted in tangles in which I said cost us an extra hour. We stayed out there an extra hour to get our limit. Limit is 5 trout. So I had 5 trout, and my son was working on getting his limit. If I would have used one rod, we would have struck and hit more fish. We would have lost fewer fish. I would have had less time spent on the bank untangling lines, et cetera, and we would have caught more fish. Okay? I'm convinced of it. So next time, try it. If you've not tried it, get confident in using one line. You can use one better than two most every time out. So there you go. So I've got these two floats out there, and eventually it worked down to one. We had one out there, and then things picked up. As I had one, then I could watch for the bites. The bites were so light, in fact, that in many times the trout were letting go of the bait, and the float would come straight back up after it went down. So oftentimes we were actually giving the fish 3 attempts before we'd strike. So the float would actually come back up in the water column, and then we'd strike. So my slip bobber float friends, they're kind of watching, and a few of them were trying to cast closer to me. Some of the guys were, unfortunately, they had like the foam floats, and they didn't have enough split shot on those, so they were trying to cast closer, but an undershotted styrofoam cheap float, that's not going to cast very far, and I think they had 6-pound line, so they weren't making it there, but I did have a friend who I saw in the spring, and during the opening day, there was like an armada of boats out on the water, and I had this this boat come in and anchor about maybe 50 yards, 25 yards away from where we were fishing, and then my son and I started catching fish, and we were starting to catch a little more consistently. Well, this guy pulled his anchor up, and then he came in one time closer, and then as we caught a couple more fish, a couple more trout, then he actually pulled up his anchor and then moved to within where he was now casting distance away from my fishing spot. Or half casting distance. So he could actually cast well past where I was fishing, which means too close. So he's casting in from the side, and I can no longer cast the full distance because this guy is now casting across my space, and I have to cut my cast short, which in float fishing is a bad deal because normally when you float fish, you cast past your target. You let the rig sink in, and then you sink the line and drag your float back into the spot where you want to fish. So he cut that action off on me. Needless to say, I was not too happy with the guy. And what happened was then, you know, I told him he could just come and sit here next to my seat if he wants my spot, you know. No bothering driving your boat up that close. Just come sit next to me and fish if you need to get in that close to me. And he said something about it being trout fishing, and apparently there's no etiquette in the early trout season. So I guess I fished harder at that point, if that's possible. So I tried to catch fish even harder. So I fished harder. What that means is focus, right? Focus, adjust the rig, put on clean bait, rebait every cast out, make sure that bait is moving all the time. And I did my best to feather cast underneath his line. The sad part was that I called him Captain Too Close. Captain Too Close had moved his boat in, and he had five people on board the boat that were kind of newer to fishing, and put him in an awkward situation. So I told him, I go, you know, it's fine if you want to be rude, but you got five people on board there that I don't think you should actually drive them around and put them in situations like that. And he kind of huffed it off and made some type of noise. So I hook another trout. Basically, now I'm about 12 feet, 10 feet from his bobber because he's casting past mine. Okay? I'm sure he'd like to reel in and be right exactly on top of mine, but he can't. He could, and he was doing it. He was scooching in closer. But what I noticed was that he had the Thill Waggler. Okay? So he had about 20% more float than me. But here's where he went wrong. And as I stated, putting the shot down the line, it's going to cause that bait to drop faster in the water column. And it's also going to cause the bait to travel shorter distance into the trout's mouth. So because all my split shot were up towards the float, lighter split shot, and there were none down towards the hook bait, I could hear when he was casting in where his shot were. And he had bigger split shot too. His other fatal error, bigger split shot instead of more smaller split shot. Okay, so I could hear his thing making a clunk in the water, and it was making a clunk. And that's exactly what the mechanics of these floats, like the slit bobber and this larger waggler, it would clunky. They'd make a clunk. They're just too clunky. They're not stealthy. They're not smooth. They don't go into the water easily. So because I had my split shot, which I said 0.8 grams worth of split shot plus a swivel, so I'm probably in the neighborhoods of 0.85 on this float. So I had only a little tiny nub above the water. Okay? So I'm basically fishing a 0.9 float. I have 1/10 of a gram of float above the water, and the rest is under. Okay? And so a lot of times on the slip bobbers, they would have 5-gram slip float, but unfortunately they'd only put like 3 grams of shot on it, so they'd have 2 grams afloat above the water. Well, that's twice as much float as I had to start with that's above the water, and that's all resistance. So in this case, the trout were not taking the bait in. I don't know what it was. We had some trout come in with spawn. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just weren't interested in eating. They were interested in something else, tail, right? So they were taking the bait, and it would just fall out of their mouth, and the float would come right back to the surface. So I combated that with one. I would let them take it. When they ejected it, I imagine that now you have a rising bait in the water column, very attractive to the trout. I always talk about a vertical presentation. The problem on the slip bobbers also, yeah, they two chunks of lead, they're going to slip through that tube in the center of the slip bobber, and they're going to go firing down at 180 miles an hour, and they're going to drag that bait straight down that traveling along the line right on top of this split shot, and they'll have next to no time to fall in the water column. Meanwhile, my rig, when it enters the water, the maggot is, or the spike on my short leader off the swivel is going to fall very slowly in the water column. So I imagine I had about 30 times more time where my bait is moving in the water column, what's called on the drop. So my bait is slowly falling down, slowly. And the fish see that. As they're traveling, they can see that travel. So I had like 30 times more, I'll call it. I didn't have a stopwatch on it, but I had a lot more time for the fish to think about my bait as being something that is food and to strike it than those slip bobbers with the tube through them with the little yarn for the stopper. Okay? So the reason that setup is bad, even if you put all the split shot up on the tube and you fished it what's called fixed style and tried to mimic my float, the problem is you have so much split shot and you have so much float that the fish literally, when they go to grab the bait, there's a pause and they can't take that down, right? They can't take that under. When they hit it, all that resistance takes it, rips it right out of their bait. So interesting thing about Captain Too Close, like I said, his float wasn't bad. And I actually commented after I'd caught my fifth trout from underneath his float. I actually commented to him that I asked him, I said, hey, what brand of float is that? Because I kind of had my suspicion, and he said it was a Phil float. And so I said, oh, that's my teacher. And he said, yeah, well, they're really good floats. And I'm like, nah, they're good. Not really good, right? Because the float that's right next door to his was had caught, I believe, six trout from underneath his bobber. So while it sat there catching none, the other, what we call a good float, had six trout. So, and I believe I released two, so that pushed it to eight. And then my son caught one more, so that was nine trout caught right next to his float. And he couldn't get close enough. I guess he got close enough for me to ridicule him. But what I did find out was this guy had actually driven past me too close in the spring season. And I had actually told him at that time, you know, hey, she's driving right through my fish. And he, you know, he gave me the, like, it doesn't matter look. Just doesn't matter, you know. And then he started casting his spinner. And he did the same thing. He anchored a little too close to me and was casting his spinner. He didn't snag me or anything, but he was way too close. Again, he was cutting off my casting line and getting in there close in the spring. And then he proceeded to tell me how floats were not that great, you know, or spinners work for him, and spinners and jigs are usually the way to go. Well, the funny thing was, who shows up in the fall? Captain Too Close is now trying to float fish. But if you're listening to the show, Graham, Captain, you didn't do it right. You didn't get it right. You got it close, but you didn't get it right. So maybe now you can look back. You can reflect back on a couple things: your manners, your poor split shot, your bad rig, and not providing the fish something that they could take down easily. You know why? You could have caught the same number of fish I could have. The fish were there. And as I always state, and the point of the showgram is, the waters are filled with fish. Hundreds of fish, thousands of fish, millions of fish, billions of fish. In front of you are one of those. Okay? Worst case scenario, you have hundreds of fish in front of you. Okay, there aren't days where they don't bite. They eat all the time. And so if you have your rig set up properly with a nice hook, that's probably the other thing Captain Close didn't have, was a good hook. We'll fix that. If you shop at any of the stores, they're going to stock my hooks this spring. You will have good hooks, Captain. Just don't get them snagged on my line. So I guess that's the rant. I promised to do the soapbox, but I don't have it. So you want to catch fish, get some 0.10 anchor split shot and some 0.20 anchor split shot. They come in assortments. Sometimes you can buy a 6 assortment that'll have the 0.10, the 0.20, the 0.30, and then it'll have some 0.6. It'll have some bigger ones. And that will allow you to have some nice rigs and to rig it up nicely. So I suggest that you never buy another piece of sporting equipment, that you buy no fishing tackle until you have the precise split shot in your tackle box. Okay? You want to improve your fishing? You want to catch fish? Get the right split shot in your tackle box. And then the next thing you'll have to do is get some 3-4 pound line max. Try and find some 3 pound line. Good luck to you, my friend. Well, I'll make it easier on you this spring. But it's hard to put good split shot on crummy line, as I said a number of times. Right, Captain? Wouldn't know, right? Water gremlin goes on easy, but it's not good split shot. So there you go. I think it's about that time.
Spanning the world to bring you a constant variety of fish news. From the Chum City Newsroom, here's your anchor, Johnny Wilkins.
I'm Johnny Wilkins, and I'm checking. Yes, nope, we do not have the whole show on mute. And this is Fishing News. Clean up, go on. Fishing is just something you grow up doing. It's part of the culture here, said Clint Guidry, president of the Louisiana Shrimp Association and a third-generation Louisiana shrimper and fisherman. My grandparents on both sides raised families in one-room trapping camps. We come from some pretty hard people. You just clean up and go on. After cleaning up and after the storm and returning to their boats, fishermen like Alfonso found shrimp hard to find on the eastern coast of Louisiana. That is until a severe cold front moved swiftly through 8 weeks later, creating the Bubba Gump shrimp effect. A very unique situation took place around the fishing community of Delacroix, explained Peter Garisa, president of Lake Pontchartrain Fishermen Association. Hurricane Isaac pushed shrimp into the marshes and estuaries where they fed and grew. A surprisingly stiff October cold front pushed them out into open water. As the shrimp rode the rapidly falling tides out of the marsh, Alfonso was waiting in the channel with lowered nets. Historic hauls for shrimpers. Alfonso had dragged shrimp nets into the marshes around Delacroix Island as long as he can remember, but he never, ever witnessed what happened that Friday night after the passage of the cold front. It's the biggest haul I've ever seen, he recalled, not just for me, for everyone. I never thought we could have caught that much shrimp. After the extreme cold front moved through, shrimpers caught monster amounts of 16 to 20 count shrimp everywhere around Delacroix. Areas included the waterway that runs into front of the camps, the houses, and the marinas that make up the fishing community. Dragging one of his favorite sweet shrimp spots near Little Lake, he returned to the dock with more than 8,000 pounds of shrimp. The catch was so enormous he had to pile shrimp on his deck because the boat had run out of storeroom. Alfonso was not alone. Almost every boat arriving at commercial docks were brimming over with more shrimp than they are equipped to hold. By late Saturday night, the enormous amount of shrimp started to cause problems for shrimpers, buyers, and processors. Boats were forced to stay dockside because processing plants were strained to keep up. One processor shut down for a half day to give employees time to recuperate. Longtime residents of the island reported that they had never seen this much shrimp caught in one day in their lifetimes. This is almost exactly the Forrest Gump movie scenario, said Garicha. Hurricane Isaac hit hard in the area, and a number of shrimpers lost boats. Those that managed to escape the storm's wrath are cashing in with the unusually large cast. So, great news for the Gulf of Mexico. Sounds like a bounce back from all the problems that they've been having with oil spill and hurricanes, etc. So, that's good news for us all. You might want to head out and get some shrimp this holiday season, right? Might want to think about it. Prices should be pretty good. I talked a little bit about local stocking and that anybody can help improve your local waters. Here's a great story of how some local agencies in Chicago did it, and it's also an inspiration so that if you feel like you want to start an effort to improve the fishing in near around you, closer to home, so that you have good fishing close to home, you don't have to wait. You don't have to not fish. You don't have to wait for vacation. You can get out there and improve your local water and then get in it, enjoy it, take care of it, and bring it up. So here's a story about how local people are working together with officials to improve their water. Wolf Lake stocked with fresh walleye. Volunteers in pairs emptied large plastic barrels of walleye fingerlings on a white ramp where they slid into Wolf Lake on the Indiana side western Wednesday afternoon in the annual walleye stocking by Perch America. It was beautiful. Bruce Caruso, organizer of the Perch America stocking for the last 14 years, others organized the first stocking in 1998, said the $6,000 raised paid for 4,300 5 to 7 inch growth walleye fingerlings from Richmond Fisheries. The hatchery, as usual, threw in some extras, and the walleye looked to average 7 to 9 inches, beauties that swam off well. Even more beautiful is how the money was raised. Some came from an eclectic set of groups that stepped forward or Caruso convinced to pitch in. British Petroleum, Hammond Port Authority, Lake County Fish and Game, Calumet Harbor Sports Fishing Club, and Mick Lurch Fishing Tackle Outlet. there's your group of people that all strung together and put it together, and they're improving the fishing right there in Wolf Lake. Right, that's right outside of Chicago. If you're not, that's on the south side of Chicago, just over the border into Indiana. It's the first water. The border actually cuts through part of the lake, I believe, so it's Illinois and Indiana. But south side of Chicago is what you want to think. From downtown is probably about a 18-minute drive to the border there. Lake County Fishing Game, Calumet Harbor. As usual, a chunk came from donation jars set at Mick Lurch and by Perch America at a couple winter outdoor shows. To me, the real beauty is the citizens' effort has carried on for so long. Usually such projects fade away after the initial blush of glory. This continues to give the local fishermen year after year. It helps that the authorities back it. The DNR set parameters for stocking early on and has been supportive throughout. In recent years, because of VHS, it's a spiral virus. The stocked fish needed to be quarantined and cleared by the Indiana State Board of Animal Health. Caruso said this year's stocking, it makes about 85,000 walleye stocked in Wolf Lake in the past 15 years. My concern is getting the fish and getting them in the water, said Caruso, a local 150 operating engineer from Munster. I would like to keep this thing going. It's beautiful. There you go. So that's your story. Get a group of people together. Take care of your local waters. Improve the fishing right near you. After all, the only person that can improve... Oh, wait, hold on. Let's get out of the news. I'm Johnny Wilkins.
What's your fish news?
Okay. Okay, so half rant. Holy cow. Is that better? Nope. We kind of lost our sound. Okay. Well, technical difficulties are how we'll end this showgram, and I hope you learned a little bit, and I mean it. Get out there and get online and search for some anchor shot. But back to that story. The people, when I teach you how to catch fish, the problem is you're going to be taking fish from your local waters. Now, it's up to you to keep your local water in top shape, and you can actually improve it. How? When you catch some nice fish and you have a nice catch, let the best, the champions, go. A couple of the larger or largest, and keep a couple of those large ones out so that you're returning the best genetics back into your fishing water. So it's up to you, really. Yes, it does hurt. And yes, you say no one's looking, or it doesn't matter if I take a few, or I got to get mine. But if you get yours and you keep taking the best fish out of that, especially with some of the tactics that I give you on the showgram, and if you're using the Vados bait and you're attracting fish and you're creating a bite in front of you, like I said, to do with the trout, then what you're going to do is you're going to take your great fishing away. So think about it. Think about putting together local efforts to work on your fishing and improving it. It doesn't take much, just a couple people. It can start with you. You can actually improve your local fishing and then take care of it. You know, it's just a treasure to have nice fish nearby to catch. It doesn't matter what they are, how big they are, whatever. But only we can be stewards and make our fishing better for the future. Okay? So I hope you've got some good tips on how to catch some fish. That rig where you put all the split shot up at the top is deadly when the water's cold or you had a post-cold front. So try that the next time you go out fishing. Move all your split shot up around the float. Get a good float, a thin float, a thin, small float, and you'll catch more fish than anybody around you. I had 4 limits of trout. I got 2 other people to limit out nearby. It works. So I'm Johnny Wilkins, and this is the Fishing School. I'm going to let you go so I can catch you later. Thanks for listening. As always, send your letters to me. You can follow me on Twitter. You can direct message me. Twitter, @ Chicago Fishing, and ChicagoFishingSchool.com. Visit our friends, VadosBait.com, and visit our friends at LiveBaitFishingTackle.com for some awesome fish-catching stuff. And I mean it. Get your split shot. That's your homework. I don't care if it takes you 2 weeks. Order it. Get it in. Get it in the tackle box, and we'll start to do some damage, okay? But we won't, right? Because you're going to take care of your local waters. Don't take my tips and strip your local waters clean, okay? All right. That's going to do it. I'm going to let you go. We'll catch you later. I'm Johnny. See ya.